B-Pod Studios.
The Mike Missinelli Show.
Hour, Mike Missinelli Show. Tim McManus comes our way in about 9 minutes. Jason Sark at 4:30. And right now, listen, if you go to our website, you'll know about this already, but I'm gonna tip you off. If you live in the area of Burlington, New Jersey, right now we have a ticket raid going on. So if you don't have FanFest tickets, you live in that area, you don't want to wait on hold, try to answer a general knowledge question correctly, we have a ticket raid going on right now at the Metro by T-Mobile in Burlington, New Jersey. It's got 1 hour left for it. So if you're in the area, stop by, grab a pair of FanFest tickets, and you can register there for a chance to win a FanFest meet and greet with Tobias Harris. Metro by T-Mobile in Burlington, New Jersey. Ticket raid going on right now. So get yourself over there and grab a pair of tickets, because this is a once-in-a-lifetime experience. You know about FanFest. We've been talking about it for a while. It is Saturday, August 24th. Allen Iverson will be there. He appears courtesy of Time After Time Watches. Apparently, Allen is going to make a grand entrance. I was tipped off today.
Oh, I heard about that, too.
He's making a grand entrance.
Uh-huh.
It's like an entrance a king would make.
It's, you know, fit for a king.
It is fit for a king. Mm-hmm. Also, Tobias Harris will be there, courtesy of Metro by T-Mobile. Switch to Metro by T-Mobile right now. Take advantage of the best deal on wireless only at Metro. And, of course, Deshaun Jackson will be there, Natalie.
Deshaun is courtesy of FanDuel. Plus, all who are in attendance at FanFest will have a chance at a meet and greet with Deshaun.
All righty. That's it. Get back to the phones. We'll take Bugsy in Newark. Bugsy, what's up, man?
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
What's going on, bud?
It's Bugsy, by the way.
Bugsy, but, as in yeah. Wade Boggs.
That's
who,
right.
Who
that's
fell asleep right. at Jason's ceremony.
But that's right, yeah. Wade Boggs. So, I listen to you guys every day, and I know Ant was filling in for you the other day, and he was talking to Sal, and he said that he goes way back with Sal, back when he used to write. And I know I've been trying to call and ask this question for Anthony himself, but I haven't been able to get through. And he said something like he was a writer for New York or the Giants or something like that. So I was just hoping or wondering if you can dumb it down for the average Joe like me on how the media personnel or reporters or anchors work when they're reporting for another city or another team that they, you know, that is not their favorite team or hometown team.
See, if you're a journalist, you can't favor anybody. So you right. you can't, like, show that you're an Eagle fan if you're covering the Giants.
I figured that because I see when I watch the news all the time.
You're not supposed to be like a fan in general when you work for a journalistic entity. He worked for the New York Post. Then I worked for the Inquirer. And you're not supposed to be a fan at all. Now, a little right. sports talk radio, you have a little more leeway to be a fan.
Gotcha. Because I watch the news every night, and I see they have different reporters on. And I noticed that the one reporter for Fox, I think her name is Kristen Rogers, she was a reporter for the Seattle Seahawks around the time when they won the Super Bowl too. And now she's like a Eagles reporter. Mm-hmm. And I just want to know, is that genuine? Or how does that work?
Well, listen, you do what you do at the time you're doing it. You know what I'm saying? Like, she can't very well not be a partisan Eagle reporter when she's working in Philly. You just kind of adapt to your surroundings. Like, I worked in New York for a couple of years, and so I commented on New York sports. So I would rip New York sports just like I would rip Philly sports if something was wrong. It's just you adapt to where you are.
So do you think when these reporters report these bogus stories about a team, they're like being biased because they don't like that team?
No.
Okay.
No, what bogus stories are you talking about? There shouldn't be any bogus stories.
No. I'm saying every once in a while you guys report out a reporter that reports a bogus story that doesn't sound accurate or whatever, and then I just think like...
No. There's no personal agenda. There shouldn't be a personal agenda. You know, if there's a personal agenda, you're in the wrong business. You can't have a personal agenda when you're covering stuff.
Kristen worked for a news station too. She wasn't like specific.
That's right. She's your bud.
Yeah, she wasn't.
You guys hang.
Yeah, we're friends. So she wasn't specific team coverage. She wasn't a reporter for the Seahawks. She was general, a news station, like a sports anchor.
Yeah, see,
yeah.
Here, the difference. Like news people will get on a bandwagon. Like your local news will be a fan, right? But if you're covering the team, you can't be a fan. Like if you're an anchor and the Eagles are in some Super Bowl run, you know, some of them will wear a jersey or something and they'll do fluffy stuff like that. They have the license to do that. But when you're covering a team, you can't do that.
Right. Yeah, no, she doesn't do that.
Like a reporter who comes to Eagles can't go on an Eagles plane wearing an Eagle jersey.
Yeah, no.
Somebody did that, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yes.
That's just like against the rules.
It was a few years ago. Geez. A younger kid, I guess he didn't know what he was doing.
Right.
You can't be a fan. Once you get in this business, you can't be a fan. Like, Sports Talk Radio, we get on missions, too. Like, if a team goes on a run to win something, we're all about it. But we also have to call like it is.
Yeah.
Here. At least that's the way I look at it. Matt in Downingtown, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Matt.
Hey, Mike. How's it going, buddy?
What's going on, Matt?
Hey, I just wanted to talk quickly about the Eagles and their running back situation.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I see right now they got 8 guys on their roster and, you know, 2 games left in the preseason. You think that's really going to be the games where they make or break who's going to stay on the team, you think?
No, I think they've already decided. they're only going to keep 4. And if they keep 5, that's the only thing that's up for grabs. There's 1 spot up for grabs. 4 are locked, and I think they're only going to carry 4. So all
who
this is
the 4 are?
Well, come on, you know who the 4 are.
Well, 4, okay.
Howard, Sanders, Sproles, Clement.
Okay, so Clement. Yeah, I wasn't sure about Clement.
Yeah, he's the special teams guy, contributes a lot. Now, Josh Adams is in the mix if they keep a 5th and they can maybe stash him or, you know, keep a roster 5. Smallwood, I think, is gone. I think Smallwood's gone. I think Boston Scott is gone. I think Pumphrey's gone.
Okay.
And all 4 of them might be gone.
Yeah, no. Once
Sproles came back, you know, that pretty much aced out some other guys.
Yeah, that's a shame. I mean, cause they definitely had a lot of talent there to work with.
What talent did you say? And those 4 guys, who's talented?
Well, just they overall, you know, had ability to run the ball. I mean, I haven't seen enough of them, but just from what I've heard, I just seem like they all might make a team. Who knows, you know, if someone picks them
Josh
up.
Josh Adams has the most upside, but he fumbles. He runs upright and fumbles. So I don't know what his strength is. Smallwood's an average back. He's a dime a dozen guy. Yeah, Boston Scott and Pumphrey don't have any talent, really.
All right, Mike.
All right, man. You want a general knowledge question?
Yeah, absolutely. Right,
here it is. Parentheses. Are you going to FanFest, by the way?
I'm not, no.
All right, here we go. This is for a pair of tickets and a place on stage to do general knowledge. All right, parentheses song. I'll give you the name of a song. There's also something in parentheses that accompanies this song as it's on the record. All right, so the artist is the Eurythmics. The song is Sweet Dreams, and it are 4 words in parentheses.
Are made of these?
Yes. Hold on a second. It says are made of this. I think she sings are made of these.
I thought it was these too. I thought it was Sweet Dreams Are Made of These.
She might be saying this.
Is she?
Yeah.
Sweet Dreams Are Made of
Because it's in the parentheses, it says Are Made of This.
I mean, the way she says it, she's kind of like the yes, right?
Yeah,
like
I thought it was these too.
Yeah. I think it's fine.
It's possible, but in parentheses, the official is this. But he got it.
Well, Ty's not here today.
No, Tyron Lannister's not here.
No.
To ice the caller. All right, let's find out what happened at training camp today. As they did the Ravens situation, and they got what they got out of that. So today is the day before the game, and what are we looking for? We call on our man Tim McManus, who covers the Eagles for ESPN.com. He is brought to us by Training Camp. Get IT certified fast at Training Camp, online at trainingcamp.com. All right, Timmy, here's the official word. Carson Wentz out for Game 3.
Well, the official word never comes when it comes to these preseason games. Doug Peterson has played it the same way for the first 2 weeks as he is for the third, where he says, oh, I haven't made that decision. We're going to make that decision late. If we follow what the trend was for the first two, he kind of played that game, and ultimately none of the first team offense really played. And it seems like we're trending in a similar direction. They've really been hyping up the idea of, and it's been true, about getting a lot of work in practice. Of course, they had 2 days with the Ravens to do those joint practices, which they tried to simulate as a game setting, did like a scrimmage type on day one. And so I don't think we're going to see a whole lot, if any, of that first team offense.
All right.
What
did you learn about the Eagles in live competition in the Ravens practices?
What did I learn about the offense? What did
you learn about the team in general, both offensively and defensively?
Yeah. Well, I learned that I would say on the first day, the defense for the Ravens got the better of Carson Wentz and the offense, but I think that they had a bit of a bounce back day on day two. Carson Wentz in particular, you know, looked a lot better on going up against the secondary, which may end up being the best secondary in the NFL, and just some pretty laser passes that he had to Zach Ertz and Alshon Jeffrey, a beauty of a deep ball that he had to Mac Hollins that only Hollins could have gotten. He dropped it, but not because of Wentz. And so I think that it was encouraging seeing that from the quarterback kind of adapting and being able to go up against and pretty much excel against one of the best units in football. I would also say that, you know, the more and more that we go on here, the more that the running back talent is beginning to show itself. I think that's one thing that has become apparent throughout training camp and emphasized in those joint practices against the Ravens. That there's just a, you know, an upgrade in talent from what they've had, particularly last year. I mean, from Miles Sanders to Jordan Howard, and I would say this is the best that Corey Clement has looked since probably 2017, the way that I saw him against Baltimore. So I think that they're in good shape in a lot of positions, particularly on offense.
Okay, so the presumption is that these practice situations would be enough for Carson Wentz to start the season. Is that what you feel?
Yeah, I generally do. Because if he were to go in, it would be for a short amount of time. So if he gets, and this is the point that Zach Ertz made a couple days ago, like if I'm playing in this preseason game, I'm going to get, what, like 12 reps tops. As opposed to these joint practices, I'm getting like first team reps in not live action, but quasi live action against, you know, first team defense. So I do feel like, you know, the logical way that this thing is trending both in Philadelphia and elsewhere is that you get the bulk of your work in a controlled environment because the risk versus the reward just isn't there. That's not to say that Wentz couldn't benefit from a little bit of work in a preseason because there is a difference between game action and simulated game action. But it's just about whether the risk reward is there. And ultimately, you know, is Wentz's performance really going to hinge on whether he gets a handful of snaps? And ultimately, I think the answer is no.
All right. So, but you know, so we've been discussing this topic all day. If does this fan base give him a little leeway in game one, game two, that he's still feeling his way? When maybe preseason could have taken care of. Are we expecting him to be sharp? And is it right to expect him to be sharp from game one on?
You know, I think some leeway should be given. And it's really because of this for me. I think that Wentz is going to have to transition into Carson Wentz 2.0. Things that we've been picking up on. He's not really jumping out of the pocket. He's been operating almost exclusively in the pocket all summer long. When we asked him about that this week, you know, he basically made the point of, I have all of these weapons. Why would I run if I can just, you know, dish it out to these guys? I think that there's been a shift in mentality. Of course, he's coming off of the 2 major injuries. And I think that he is going to try to operate within the structure of the play a whole lot more than we were accustomed to seeing over the first 3 years. Of him in the NFL, which means there's going to be a feeling out period because there's going to be the instincts of old versus kind of the new teachings of the new. And how do you balance that? And when's the right time to escape? And when's the right time to hang in there? And I think that there is going to be an adjustment period there. And that's why I think that a little bit of leeway should be given. Now, who knows? Maybe this offense comes out gangbusters.
Then I must be a hard-hearted man because I'm not giving him any leeway.
You're not.
No, because, you know, the way they have gone through this preseason, they keep telling you the practices are fine, blah, 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 blah. He doesn't have to play. So then I'm expecting him right out of the gate to play well. I don't give him any leeway.
Okay. You know, but the other side is that he does have some new weapons to work with. He has to figure out how to distribute all that. And the biggest thing for me is that I do think that he's going to be playing a different kind of football. I mean, it's not going to look radically different, but I think it's going to be an adjustment. In terms of being a quarterback that's so used to extending plays to somebody that's going to try to operate within the construct. So for that reason, exclusively, I would say that's where I think some leeway should be given, or at least you shouldn't expect the kind of finished product to be in front of your eyes week one, week two.
Okay. All right. I'm a hard-hearted man, Natalie. I guess I am.
And
Natalie agrees kind of.
Well, I said 2 weeks. Anthony said a month. I said 2 weeks before the harsh criticism comes
in. Really?
You said a week.
I said 0 week.
I don't think they can lose any games.
Okay.
Yeah, and of course, we can all put whatever timelines we want, and then the first game will happen, and you know everybody will get emotional and react like crazy anyway.
Yeah, probably right.
1 week, no matter what timeline.
All right, so will this third preseason game be the difference, you think, between the Eagles keeping 4 or 5 running backs? And if so, who has the most to gain here?
I think that is the most probably enticing, I don't know if you want to call it battle or situation, roster decision that the Eagles have to make. Currently, I was just looking at a 53, like what would I do? And I have them keeping 4. Miles Sanders, Jordan Howard, Corey Clement, Darren Sproles. That would put Wendell Smallwood on the outside. That would put Josh Adams on the outside. And, you know, I think it really would come down to, you know, Boston Scott has been impressive in spots. I think that, you know, there's other demands at other positions and levels of depth that it would be really hard to get rid of somebody and justify having a fifth back to me. I think that, you know, that this is what the third game is about for guys at the running back position. You know, can Smallwood make a final impression or Adams make a final impression? To really state his case, like he should be on this 53 man. I would say the same thing applies to wide receiver. You know, Greg Ward or Mark and Michelle, can one of those guys squeeze on? Right now, I have them keeping 5. But one of these guys can make a case that there should definitely be a 6. So that's where, some of this value is. And I think some of the intrigue from watching it from a fan's perspective is to see these guys who are scrapping for a final roster spot to see if they can change some minds kind of last second year.
Is there any chance that either of those two receivers that you mentioned could be the 5 and Hollins is out, or no?
I would say no to that with Hollins being healthy because of what he gives on special teams. I think that will probably trump the intrigue that you would have from a receiver perspective for one of these other guys. Because Hollins would be, in theory, superior on special teams. And when you're getting down to kind of the bottom of the roster, like who's going to be filling out the game day roster, I think that's kind of what takes precedence. When you already have guys like Alshon Jeffrey, DeSean Jackson, Nelson Aguilar, J.J. Arcega-Whiteside that can fill some of those primary roles for you.
I know linebackers did not consider it a very important position these days around the league and by the Eagles, but they seem to be really scrambling at linebacker. So, like, what's going on there, and what are their concerns?
Well, yeah, and there's the difference, I think, Mike, between, you know, the position not putting, like, a ton of resources in there. I understand that philosophically. I don't disagree with it. You know, where they're putting their emphasis at other positions, like along the lines, corner, quarterback, obviously. Like generally, I'd buy into that. But that's not to say that they couldn't be in better shape or that it might not present an issue, even if the position is getting devalued. Because we haven't seen a Nigel Bradham at full tilt yet. He's still recovering from from foot surgery and isn't quite feeling himself yet. And the regular season is like right there on the horizon now. And the projected co-starter would be Kamu Grugier-Hill. And he's going to be out for the beginning of the season. So all of a sudden you're dipping into depth where you don't really have depth. Zach Brown and LJ Fort and Nathan Gary all of a sudden come to kind of the fore for you. So I think that it's a spot that definitely needs to be watched and could become an issue, especially early while you're waiting for guys like Bradham and Grugier Hill to come back and be at full form.
Okay. All right. So tomorrow, big game three, and this will be the game that we can even not even pay attention to the following week. I can't wait for the season to get here. This is like the longest time I had to wait for a season. Maybe it just seems that way, but.
I hear you. And we'll get some more clarity as we get closer as to exactly who's going to be playing in this third game. You know, Jason Peters said yesterday he thinks he'd like to play a half. So, mm-hmm.
So we'll know tomorrow.
So maybe, some more bodies than we first were anticipating will end up being on the field. So I guess we'll have to stay tuned for that.
All right, Timmy. Thank you, man. We'll appreciate you. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
I'll talk to you.
There's Tim McManus covering the Eagles for ESPN.com. And he is, of course, brought to us by the great folks at Training Camp. That's right, Training Camp. If you want to get IT certified, Training Camp is where you go. Online at trainingcamp.com. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Your calls. We forgot one of the early premises is that Andrew Satrina is getting soft on Gabe Kapler, saying that Gabe is getting blamed unnecessarily for things that go wrong with the Phillies. Do you agree with that? We'll talk about it after this.
The Mike Missinelli Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic.
All right, it's 4:30, and it is the Mike Missinelli Show, and it's time to talk some baseball. Phillies in the second game against the Red Sox. Big win for them last night, even though the Red Sox kind of gift-wrapped it for them. So tonight, Drew Smiley tries to get it done against Rick Porcello, whose last start was pretty good, but he's been leaking oil. Let's touch base with the man who, of course, is a Hall of Famer. That's right. I'm glad to introduce him as that. He is the great Jason Stark, and he is brought to us by... who's he brought to us by these days? Anybody? Oh, yeah. Xfinity. Yes, I was looking at my other papers. Stay connected during the biggest moments of every game with Xfinity Internet, delivering reliably fast speeds even during peak hours when everyone's online. Learn more at Xfinity.com. Jason, how you doing today?
I'm good, Mike. What's up?
Big last weekend for you.
Oh,
I saw you get interviewed by Murph on the broadcast. You threw out the first ball. You actually threw a strike.
Yeah, I did.
And then you got on the hot dog wagon and start shooting hot dogs at the people.
It was awesome. Now, first off, on the first pitch, you wanted me to throw over how many miles an hour?
Yeah, you lobbed it in there. It was a lob job. Yeah,
you know, Mike, I really wasn't trying to throw 98 on the black.
You Jamie Moyer'd it. But I'm not going to criticize you for that. You threw a strike.
I did. Mission accomplished.
Yes.
You know, they asked me on the morning show on a scale of 1 to 10 how I'd rank it. I gave it a 9, but, like, what's a 10?
A 10 with a little more velo would have been a 10.
I guess I probably could have gone all the way to the top of the rubber, but
you could have. And you could have gone into a windup or something.
I didn't conk the photographer in the head like that.
No,
from the White Sox.
You did not become a viral moment, which is good. Yes, it was very.
I did what I needed to do, and then I launched the hot dogs.
Uh-huh.
The pinnacle of my career.
Yeah, that should be the pinnacle of your career. Were you nervous throwing the first pitch?
When your catcher is a Fanatic, it's hard to get that nervous.
All right. So when you walked out, you go, because normally it goes, I can't gork this, right? You know?
Yeah. I didn't warm up in the pen on Sunday, but I have been throwing. I was pretty confident when they didn't lead me to the top of the rubber that I could get it there.
All right. That's good stuff. All right. Now let's talk about this team. which still is only two games out of that last wild card spot. And they beat the Red Sox last night, although they did get a little help from the Red Sox. So,
wow.
But they, every time they build up momentum and they're looking to go past the four-win threshold, they seem to come up short. Is this really what we're going to have to expect, that it's impossible for them to win enough games in a row to really make a run here?
Well, I don't know how big a run you're going to have to make in this field. You know, at least one team is going to show up in a National League wild card game, and you're going to be thinking, how the heck does this team make the playoffs? So there is that. Now, do they have enough pitching to really run off a big string? I don't know if they do, but look, if you survive this Red Sox series, now the schedule is helpful for a little while here. This is the chance. This is the opportunity to win some games. And the other thing that from last night that was really notable is the decision to pitch Aaron Nola every fifth day. And I mean, I was glad to see that sense of urgency. Mm-hmm. I really was. If you look back to the end of April, when he had a 5.68 ERA. They're 16-5 when he started. They're 9 under when anyone else has started. So I did that math. That means they played like a 123-win team when he starts, and a 72-win team when anyone else pitches.
Yeah.
So you got to ride that guy as much as you can ride him.
Yeah, you're right. This is a spot where they can win five in a row. They take care of tonight, with the Marlins, right, and their little revenge action going on. They keep us at bay. It's interesting. Now, the big change, of course, Charlie comes on board, and right away we go, oh, Charlie had the magic touch because they did hit. And then they kind of stop. So, but their numbers, since he has arrived, are better. Is that coincidence or what? But give me the numbers first.
Well, I mean, if you include the Cole Hamels game, the first game with Charlie, when the crowd was chanting his name, when they scored 11 runs, they're better. If you take away that game, they're not better. They've hit .232 since that game with a .684 OPS, slugged under .400. Under John Mailey, they were .245 with a .738 OPS. The runs per game was 4.6 under Charlie, 4.7 under Mailey. It just tells you what Charlie's dealing with here.
Yeah, all right. So their lineup now recently has had Rhys Hoskins in the leadoff hole, and a lot of people are bothered by that. I mean, I can see that they're trying to get him going, and more at-bats is a chance to get him going. But what do you make of this lineup he's been trotting out?
You know, this is one of those puzzles where the pieces don't fit together, and that's a puzzle in and of itself. It's really surreal. Like, if I told you in spring training you'd get to August in Boston and Rhys Hoskins would be hitting leadoff and Gene Segura would be hitting cleanup, you'd say, what?
Yeah.
But I do understand what they're trying to do, right? Rhys Hoskins is 4 for his last 48. And when you put a guy like that in the leadoff hole and you tell him, just see pitches, it simplifies things. Because he can do that. He saw 27 pitches last night. The two guys behind him, Realmuto and Harper, saw 26 combined. He's led off 5 games. He's seen 110 pitches. That's incredible. And so you're at least going to get that out of him. Plus, he did actually reach base 3 times last night. Yeah. He's done that once in the previous 4 weeks.
All right, so tonight Dickerson's in the cleanup hole. Segura's moved into the fifth hole. Logan Morris is in the lineup as
right
well. I don't know what's going to happen for the rest of this year, but the big question is, will the manager be back? And I'm thinking that the higher percentage is that he will be back. And then, secondly, when you're looking at building the team next year, they're still going to run into the same problems. They need to assemble a better starting pitching staff. So how do they do that?
Those conversations are going on, that's for sure. On the manager, I mean, I would guess he's more likely to be back than not be back, but let me, you know, tell me how the next 6 weeks are going to go.
Yeah, and if they fall off the cliff, then obviously it changes it.
I told you last week, I really think anything is possible. That doesn't mean it's likely, but it's definitely possible. When you make a change like firing the hitting coach in the middle of August, it's their way of saying that they're just not going to sit back and let the process continue without doing something about it. Now, how you build a better rotation, it's going to take some bold thinking. You're going to have to make some tough decisions about who you trust and who you want to keep. And it's going to take spending some big dollars in free agency this winter. I think the free agent crop's a little bit better than it was last winter when it was really Patrick Corbin and everyone else. But I don't think Gerrit Cole's coming here. It won't be easy, but I think it's going to take at least one big trade and one big signing.
All right, give me the biggest signing they can make other than Gerrit Cole. Who is feasible for them to sign?
You're just talking starting pitching.
Yes,
correct?
Yes, starting pitching. We were going over some names last week, but I'm curious to know who you think would be a viable. Because the best you can do, I think, is a three. And with all the free agents, if you're not going to go for Cole, the best you can do is a three. You're not going to get Yu Darvish either, right?
I don't see that.
Okay. All right. So we're down to the threes.
All right. I have to think about this. They need a Gerrit Cole. That's what they need. But if you go chase a Gerrit Cole, then I just think it blows you out in terms of accomplishing pretty much anything else. So then, where do they go from there? Let me take a look at this list.
Okay.
Mad Bum? God, he's coming here, don't you?
Yeah, I take that.
Jake Odorizzi is a good kind of name.
Three. He's a three.
He's a three who's more in his good days. Tanner Roark is a good name, but he's a three.
Three. How much will Bumgarner cost you?
You know, he's only 30. And there'll be a lot of pressure on the Giants to sign him. That's going to be a big one. I think, again, depending on how he finishes up, he is north of Patrick Corbin. Maybe not that many years, but that's a big one. That's 25 million a year. I think. I mean, I'm bad at this, but it's in that range.
No, the guys we're talking about, we're not going to get Strasburg. Felix Hernandez is not worth it. Cole Hamels is out there, but, he's at this point a three. Keuchel is out there. Porcello. These guys are all kind of the same, aren't they?
I think they're the same, but you know what I think? I think they make you better. I think any of them make you better. And here's a big question for you and for them. Let's just say Madison Bumgarner wanted to come here. Would you be better off signing one Madison Bumgarner or signing two of those other guys we mentioned?
One Bumgarner.
You'd rather have...
Yes, I got to have a reliable... I can't deal with guys that are bottom rotation ends anymore,
Well, you do get an attitude... with a guy like Bumgarner, and you get the track record of a winner of no nonsense, you do get that. But how many arms does this need? Does this team need? Right,
they need two starting.
Jake Arrieta is going to be back, right?
Right, they need two starting arms. Out.
Okay, so I would say you're looking to add two, however you can add them.
All right.
Plus depth.
Here's what I do. Not that you care. But I like Bumgarner because now that gives me Nola, Arrieta, Bumgarner, or Nola, Bumgarner, Arrieta. I take a shot with Medina joining the rotation, and then I go, and Velasquez is still here. He's my fifth. And then I got one guy that I invested in that I know is going to help my rotation, and another guy from the minor leagues who's got great stuff. Who maybe a little too soon for him, but it's too bad. I'm bringing him up because it's better than Jake Odorizzi or Tanner Roark.
I totally do not see Medina here. I don't see that, but you know, that doesn't mean that you don't have options.
I'm taking a shot, Jason. I'm being progressive here. I'm bringing somebody with talent into my rotation.
Talent's good. But the, you know, there's some arms there who are very intriguing.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll see. I can't take any. I can't take any more of the Eflin types. I'm done with the Eflin types.
I would watch guys like Damon Jones. I would watch guys like Spencer Howard. There's something there, but the thing is, I don't know if you can count on them, and I don't think you would expect to count on them early.
Yeah, I hear you. Howard's further away than Medina is, so I'm going to give it a shot. All right, Jason. It's a pleasure. Always a pleasure talking ball with you.
Great to talk to you there, man. Thanks.
All right, we'll talk to you. There's Jason Stark. He's brought to us by Everfresh Juices and Juice Drinks. Why strike out with a boring soda when you get a grand slam with Everfresh Juices and Juice Drinks available at your neighborhood store? Everfresh Nature's Refreshment. You see, I don't go Oda Rizzi Roark because, again, that's like the same thing I got. I'm changing. I want to do something different than what I've got. If I'm going to invest in Bumgarner, I know I got 1, 2, 3 that's decent. Good guy at the top, two guys that will get me outs, fourth guy with electric stuff, fifth guy Velasquez is still here. I don't want Tanner Roark or Oda Rizzi on my staff. How about you?
I do like Oda Rizzi. I like Oda Rizzi a lot, yeah.
Well, if you can't, would you have Roark and Oda Rizzi or but one Bumgarner?
I'm not a big Roark guy. I get Bumgarner.
It's either two mediocre guys or one guy has a track record. What do you want?
It's a tough question. I do like what Bumgarner's done this
year. Does Oda Rizzi and Roark improve you enough?
They improve you.
Do you improve you more than a Bumgarner Medina?
No. All but right. I also don't know what I have in Medina.
I got electric stuff. All right? So he's going to have to learn on the job. 610-622-0975. Your calls, the rest of the show, right here, Mike Missinelli Show, back after this.
The Mike Missinelli Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
All right, 4:51. Mike Missinelli Show. 5 o'clock hour is coming. I think a couple topics to talk about, including chicken sandwiches in the 5 o'clock hour. But there's this big chicken sandwich thing going on now.
Yeah.
On social media,
yes,
it's crazy,
huge. When Mike Scott was here yesterday, he had his with him.
Oh, he did.
Mm-hmm.
And a chicken sandwich with him?
Yeah, and then he left it here, and then I throw it out.
He left the sandwich here?
Half of it.
Oh, he ate half of it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
And then he accidentally left it here.
Had he left the whole one, would you have
eaten? We were talking about it.
I would have eaten it. Oh, yeah. Not even a question.
All right, we'll get into that in 5 o'clock hour. Let's get to the phones, get Dave in Center City in here. What's up, Dave?
The fun has begun. Mikey misses back.
Oh, Dave, you're too kind.
Hey, listen, before I get down to business, big time loud bravo to Natalie Eganoff. While one or both of the Prima Donna A-team members were on vacation, she answered and commented on the thoughts of the best callers in the city flawlessly, even beating Club Tyrone to the punch. But that's no surprise. That's what A-team members do.
We pick up for each other.
You better believe it.
There you go.
Hey, Mikey Miss.
Yes.
You're the only one that warned us, and quite frankly, you're the only one that foresaw, whatever participle that is, all our backup quarterbacks going down.
Well, I kind of said, I didn't want them to go down, but I thought that they would have to sign another one, you know?
Right. Now, Mikey Miss, that leads me to a Kaepernick theory, okay?
Yeah.
This guy has an unbelievable 2012 campaign. He gets screwed out of a Lombardi trophy. because of two interference penalties that were never caught in the end zone at the end of the game. Then he takes them all the way to the NFC title the next year. Okay? Now, he has not taken a snap from center in 3 years. But I think it's safe to say, Mike, if he had a Lombardi trophy on his resume, the NFL corporate you-know-whats would overlook his ideology.
Interesting. So had he actually won a Super Bowl, there's no way he would have been out of the league.
Mikey, this is so bad. I can hardly hear you on the other end. I don't know what's wrong with my phone. Oh. But I think they would overlook the 3 years of Russ. Bring him in. It doesn't matter.
No, you raise a good point. If he was a Super Bowl winner, would he have been blackballed by teams? Probably not. So winning does. But since he didn't win, you can justify it. But listen, I'm kind of past it at this point. I think that the guy got railroaded as far as playing in the NFL. There's no question in my mind that there was an unspoken collusion and that the league encouraged him not to get back in the league because they want to deal with this issue again. And so it's safe. And Josh McCown is an adequate backup quarterback. And it's probably fueled by the fact that they did not believe in Sudfeld as much as we thought they did. So here he is. You got a 40-year-old veteran backup who probably can be trusted to win a few more games than Sudfeld. But again, if they have to play for a substantial part of the season, doesn't matter anyway. Right? Because I don't think they're going to be as successful.
Right. None of them are Nick Foles.
They can't carry it on. No matter who they put there. All right, 5 o'clock hour is ahead with your phone call. We have one open line, 610-622-0975. I see where Gary from San Antonio is checking in. I heard from Gary in a long time. Back after this, Mike Mussinelli Show, 97.5 The Fanatic, NBC Sports Philly.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.